This podcast is sponsored by Year to Success, the transformative course that combines education, inspiration, and action to help you achieve your personal and professional dreams. Start making small daily improvements for the most amazing year of your life at yeartosuccess.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Toastmasters accredited speaker program recognizes some of the most exceptional professional speakers in Toastmasters. It's designed for sought-after presenters who combine expert knowledge in a particular subject matter with mastery of the spoken word. The Accredited Speaker Award, which requires applicants to pass two levels of judging, is the highest earned designation recognized by Toastmasters International. Since the program began in 1981, only 95 candidates have earned this prestigious honor. This year, two members, Lauren Parsons and Maureen Zappala, became the 94th and 95th candidates to earn the coveted title after giving a live presentation in front of a panel of judges at the 2024 Toastmasters International Convention in Anaheim, California. We're excited to speak with another one of them today. Today we're speaking with number 95, newly minted accredited speaker. She is Maureen Zappala, a former NASA propulsion engineer or rocket scientist who works with high performers to overcome imposter syndrome, the secret of self-doubt that haunts competent professionals. At NASA, she was the youngest and first female manager of the Propulsion Systems Laboratory, a jet engine test facility. Now, don't let that Big Bang Theory geekiness fool you. Maureen is an award-winning keynote speaker and author of five books, including the most recent, Get Your Best People to Give Their Best Effort. Maureen has been a Toastmaster for 25 years and, of course, in 2024, earned the coveted accredited speaker designation. In 2019, after 36 years in Cleveland, Maureen moved to a warmer climate, and that's a good thing because Maureen still can't find her winter coat, but that's okay with her. And that's because she's coming to us today from her new home in Las Vegas, Nevada. Maureen Zappala, welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be with you again, because this is not our first run around the parking lot here.
No, you are a repeat offender. This is your fourth appearance. And in fact, I had to take a look back. It's been almost 9 years ago, back in episode 103, where you joined us. Yeah, you joined us to discuss goal setting and how it led you to the 2009 World Champion of Public Speaking finale. Do you remember that?
Wow. Yeah, that's great. I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Close, but no cigar. But this time around,
hey, who cares? You know, you're in the top 10 out of 30,000 people. I was good. I was thrilled and happy. And yeah.
But now you're an accredited speaker, and congratulations on that. And Maureen, just to kick things off, what does that mean to you after your 25 years as a Toastmaster?
It's tremendous. And actually, I have to think back. I've been in and out of Toastmasters a few times. I don't know if the total amount is 25 years. So it's probably close to 25, but I don't know the exact number. Not that it's a big deal, but I was like, wow, really? 25? I'm old. Greg, we're old. But as far as what it means to me, when I gave my presentation at the convention, you know, it's the final stage in the accreditation process. I was so overcome with emotion because I love Toastmasters. And I think that's what it means to me. It was like, it was coming back to the beginning. Toastmasters put me on the path to become a professional speaker. It was a beautiful moment to bring it full circle back to the organization that launched me. It's not so much a feather in my cap as it is a giving back. And that's what was beautiful for me.
And that certainly came across in the presentation. And we will certainly be talking about that in a little while. But
do you mean the part where I told everybody to stop clapping because I was running out of time?
I love that part. That was great. Yeah, I did have that in my notes to ask you about that. Yeah. Now, I know you wanted to become a professional speaker, but what motivated you specifically to embark on the accredited speaker journey?
Well, let me take a step back. What spurred me to become a professional was actually Mark Brown. And it was at the contest in 2009 when I was in the finals. You know, I did not win, but at the end of the contest, I went up to Mark to give him a big hug. He had been just a support and a friend during the journey to the con. He wasn't able to coach me because he was in the middle of moving, but we still stayed in touch. And I became very dear friends with him and his wife. But at the end of the contest, he gave me a big hug and said to me personally, I mean, the crowd is buzzing all around. They all want to talk to him, not me, but him, because he's a world champion. And he said to me personally, very quietly, he said, "You have a message and you have presence. You need to take this to a bigger audience." And that was the seed that put me on the path to figure out, what does that mean? Oh, wait, big audience? Oh, and they pay? I'm in. He really was very instrumental. So was Rory Vaden, who won, I think, second place the year or two prior to 2000, maybe 2007 or 2008, I don't remember. He also was one to encourage me to pursue professional speaking. When I did become a speaker, and I did that being in Toastmasters tandem with being in the National Speakers Association, you know, Toastmasters teaches you the art of speaking. NSA teaches you the business of speaking. They are hand in hand, hand in glove. They need to go together. Spent a lot of years in NSA learning how to make a business out of it. And in that journey, as I looked left and right, I thought, oh, look, I think I've done the work to become an accredited speaker. I think I'm going to go for it. I had built a business. That was the journey. The accredited speaker was the recognition of the journey. Yeah, it was kind of like, I think I'm going to do this.
As you were speaking, I could hear Mark's deep, bold voice. Of course, he is the voice of Toastmasters International. Yep. When we hear them at, when we hear him at the conventions. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, was it a smooth journey? Tell us a little bit about the actual journey and maybe a memorable moment or two along the way.
Smooth in that it was a singular focus for me. That was always the end goal, was to become a professional speaker. It wasn't always smooth. When I first started, I had two little kids at home. I could not be a road warrior. I did not want to be a road warrior. So that limited me to doing things from Cleveland or a short drive away. As my kids got older, and then I moved to Las Vegas just about 5.5 years ago, both my kids were adults out of the house. I had the freedom to build a business, and I did. I worked hard. I threw myself in 100% to build a client base, to fill up my calendar. And then COVID hit. Oh, it wiped out my calendar in a day. So actually, I stepped back from speaking. I did a little bit of virtual, but I didn't enjoy it. So I quit speaking pretty much altogether, did something else for 2.5 years. And then when COVID cleared out of the way and meetings started coming back, that's when my calendar started filling up. Now, the fact that my calendar filled up was due to the work I had done years before. So it wasn't like I decided today I'm going to become a speaker and then next year my calendar is going to be filled up. It's a process. It takes a lot of effort. So the work I had done previously filled up my calendar when things started opening up and meetings started coming back in person. So I was able to quit doing what I had previously been doing. I was doing home decorating and furniture sales for 2 years. Loved it. But when my calendar started filling up, I was making more money as a speaker. So I quit that. And so I continued along, and it was during the time after COVID that I looked at the requirements for accredited speaker, and I thought, oh, I've got that. I've so got that. It was like a no-brainer for me to just finish the process.
What was something that you learned along the way, or perhaps something about yourself that you learned along the way that perhaps maybe you picked up from a mentor or two?
Yeah, I learned that it's way more work than you think it is to build a speaking business, that you get a lot of no's. It takes a lot of research, a lot of emailing, building relationships. It takes a lot of odd speaking engagements along the way. I'm primarily a keynote speaker. So I open and close conferences, big conferences at some point, and my fee is substantial. It wasn't always that way. I had to baby step my way up there. I had to do the smaller engagements, the free engagements. I had to be in bizarre locations and bad stages and weird microphone setups, all because I wanted to put my message out there. Overcoming imposter syndrome is a message that so many audiences needed. And it's something that transcends industries and gender and finances and positions in a company. It hits everybody. It's when you don't think you're as smart as everybody thinks you are, even though you are. So it's a message that resonates. Fortunately, it's also a message that's highly searched. So people will Google it and land on my website. So that has helped a lot. But it is way more work than I thought it was going to be.
It's a perfect transition to start chatting a little bit about your presentation. Confidence is not rocket science. The message is certainly something I think everyone can relate to, but it's also really a little of your origin story, is it not? Tell us a little bit about that, Maureen.
Oh, absolutely. Back when I first started working at NASA, I was hired as a project engineer in 1983, right out of college. I was, of course, one of a few women in a male-dominated field, but it was NASA, and it terrified me because I thought, wait, did they know that I'm not a straight-A student? I don't belong here. I always felt unqualified. I always felt in over my head. Even as I progressed and developed expertise and was known around the world for the work that I had done, eventually even became the facility manager of the propulsion systems lab outside of Cleveland, I still felt like any day they're going to figure out I really don't know what I'm doing. I learned years later that it was imposter syndrome, where smart people doubt their own ability. They self-doubt themselves. They second-guess their decisions. They feel like they're not qualified, and that causes them to feel like a fraud, which is where imposter syndrome comes from. It doesn't mean you are intentionally trying to deceive people and be something that you're not. A lot of people that confuse the two. But it is a thought process distortion. I learned it years later after I left NASA, but it still is something that follows me, even as a professional speaker. When I'm surrounded, when I walk into an audience that I'm not part of their industry, I've spoken with medical communities, I've spoken with CPA organizations, I've spoken with manufacturing organizations. I don't have a background in a lot of those fields. So the temptation is for me to think, oh, I don't belong here. But yet I'm focused on my message of imposter syndrome, and I know that they need to hear it. So that propels me past that irrational feeling of not belonging. But you're right, Greg. It affects a tremendous amount of the population. Somewhere upwards of 75, maybe 80% of professionals feel it, but it's overcomable. I know there's a narrative out there that says imposter syndrome is your superpower. I don't believe that. I don't want to live with imposter syndrome. I don't want to feel that constant self-doubt. So I say, don't get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Get familiar with being uncomfortable, because familiarity means you remember what it felt like and you know you're going to get through it. So it's a slightly different message.
In your presentation, you mentioned that you can't eliminate it, but you can alleviate it. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you could explain that a little bit, and maybe what are some of the coping mechanisms that you can use, and how would you determine which coping mechanism to use?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. Imposter syndrome, it isn't always completely eliminated. In fact, very rarely is it is, because it's usually triggered by change and transition. So if you're in a position where you've moved from one industry to another, you've moved from one job to another. For some people, it's one day, to another, because their job is that unscripted. Within Toastmasters, oh my gosh, it lives and breathes in Toastmasters, because so many people come from another industry and they want to get better at a specific skill, communication or leadership or both. And they come into this bizarre but hilarious and celebratory world that is unfamiliar. Why are they applauding at me? Why are they, what's the formality of this meeting? Everybody else here knows what's going on except me. So there's a change, a transition, a contrast between what you're familiar with and what you're not. So that causes you then to feel, uh-oh, I don't belong here. That's where the trigger is, change. And also, it can come from, there's many sources, your background, how you were raised, your cultural background, the industry that you're in. It could even be something about yourself that sets you apart from others, a physical issue, an accent, the fact that you are a woman in a man's world, that you are a CPA working in a manufacturing company. These kinds of things amplify or even are the source of imposter syndrome. It doesn't ever go away, but you mitigate it in the moment. You can manage it and alleviate it. I won't give you my whole 1-hour keynote. And that was actually one of the challenges when I presented at Toastmasters that I had to condense my 1 hour keynote to 16 minutes. So I took one little slice of it. And that slice was basically to just be so in tune with what you bring to the table in terms of your skills and your character traits. But another coping mechanism, another way to alleviate it, is to recognize first and foremost, you're not alone. And that diffuses a lot of the anxiety, because as you look left and right, you realize, oh, look, he feels it, she feels it, we're all in good company.
Well, it's funny because I thought your keynote was a little longer than that. I didn't realize it was only 16 minutes.
That was the limit. Yeah, 16 to 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Because it was full. In fact, I have a lot of notes here that I took while I was watching it. One of the things you talked about is this fraud-free framework. Now, that's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. Could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's my 5 strategies to overcome imposter syndrome. When I give my keynote, I focus on 3. At Toastmasters, I only took 1. But I have 5 strategies. I call it the fraud-free framework. And it's not step 1, step 2, step 3. They're just randomly thrown together. So pick one, work on it. You'll significantly alleviate those self-doubts and fraud fears. It includes recognizing you're not alone, understanding what the symptoms are, understanding what you bring to the table, like I just mentioned, understanding that other people around you have a different perception of you than you have of yourself, understanding the spiritual or transcendental implications of it. It's a very intimate topic. Intimate topics require an intimate and personal solution. So I challenge people to go on a journey, to do the deep, deep inner work. And then the 5th strategy would be to truly accept the concrete data that exists to say you deserve the job, the promotion, the title, the income, the whatever. Things like letters of recommendation, news releases, awards, certificates, all those concrete pieces of evidence that support the fact that you deserve the job you have.
It reminds me of the one thing that stood out for me that I found that was one of the most powerful things was when you said, the presence of doubt does not negate the absence of confidence. And that's something that really stuck with me.
Yeah, because we confuse. Doubt means confidence. This is not a self-confidence issue. Imposter syndrome does not mean you lack confidence. It means you have a limit of confidence because confidence got you to that point. It got you the job. It got you the promotion. It got you the position, the responsibility. So you don't lack confidence. It's just now you got a limit because something is changing. And you look back and you think, well, what I did in the past won't get me to the future.
Is that where the dot comes in? Tell us about that.
Oh, the dot.
I love the dot.
I know. I'm telling you, Greg, everybody loves the dot. I don't want to go into a lot of detail. Go watch the video. But the dot, it represents your circle of expertise. And I have people do, an actual hold your hands in a circle in front of you. We need to really understand that where we are now in our lives was wrought with a lot of work, blood, sweat, and tears. It was battle born. You did the work. You got the degree. You took on the challenge. You've got the expertise, the education, the experience, the preferences, the feedback. Everything that professionally defines you is within your little dot, your circle of expertise. And we undervalue exactly what's in the dot. And we think when people look at us, they see a bigger dot. Like, oh, she's smarter than, they think I'm smarter than I really am. And that's not true. That's not true. And we think that everybody else has a dot that's 10 times the size of our dot. She's smarter than I am. Well, maybe, but that doesn't mean that she's any more worthwhile and that you're less worthwhile than anybody else. So I have people go through this funny exercise. And it is the single thing that people remember and repeat after my events. I get emails weeks later about, I'm going to remember my dot. So it's a powerful exercise and a powerful visual.
I took in the convention virtually and I was sitting on my couch while you were presenting.
You're doing the dot on your couch?
Yes. I stood up and I said, I have it written down even. This is my dot. I worked for my dot. I'm proud of my dot.
Proud of my dot. I have cool a cool dot.
I have a cool dot. I love it. I mean, I've been podcasting since 2006, and still every once in a while, I feel when I'm interviewing someone, I feel sure. that I just don't have it. And then I need to go back to these types of things. So, you know, getting that encouragement.
Well, and remember too, that because you are doing what you do, the person on the other end of the microphone, no camera, as we've been told, person on the other end of the mic or on the other microphone is thinking the same thing. It's like, oh my gosh, they're interviewing me. Am I going to say the right thing? He's probably interviewed all these great people and I'm just a nobody and I don't know how to podcast. And what happens if I lose internet and blah, 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 blah. So the two of you have got this internal dialogue going on. So you're not alone. Me included.
You're reading my mind, Maureen. And go, tell us a little bit about, this is funny. Tell us a little bit about the part in the presentation where you were saying you're running out of time. I love that.
Oh my gosh. It's funny. That was a moment. I'm telling you, it was a moment for me, an unexpected moment for me. And I think for the audience too, when I was preparing for the presentation, you don't get disqualified for going over time. But it was pretty clear that the judges could very well consider it in their evaluation some way. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how am I going to condense 1 hour to 15 or 16 minutes? Well, I don't want to condense, but I have to give value in 16, 18 minutes. So I took a slice out, I edited it, you know, I kind of changed it, knowing full well I probably will never give it in that mode again, ever. I will not give a 16 to 18 minute talk. So I didn't put a lot of emphasis on making it perfect. I knew the content was good. I just had to make it clean. So I practiced it a few times at the convention before I went up. And then when I went up, I was like, okay, 16 to 18 minutes. I know I'm going to nail it because I've done it a bunch of times. The time clock was right in front of me at my feet. Just keep an eye on the clock, which that in itself is a struggle for me because I'm so engaged in the audience. So I'm going along and I'm thinking, okay, I'm on track. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. This is going to work out. And then when I got emotional, I stopped right towards the close and I said, oh, my precious, precious Toastmaster audience, because I truly felt, I'm going to cry right now. I truly feel this debt, this appreciation, this passion for the organization that changed my life and put me on this path. And it just all came at me at that moment. And I was trying to close to go on. I had a closing statement. And I said, oh, my precious Toastmaster audience. And I started to cry. And everybody started clapping. And I panicked because I'm down to like 17 minutes and 35 seconds. And so I said, stop clapping. I'm running out of time. Which totally lands with a Toastmaster audience, right? We live and die by that clock. And they all started laughing and cheering even more. And I was like, no, I really mean it. And I thought, okay, Maureen, just go with it. We're having a little love affair up here. Just go with it. So odd if the judges ding me for it. If I lose this because of that, this moment was worth it. So I was really... I was really surprised when I did get it. And the judges actually said, no, that was charming.
For a moment there, I thought people thought that you were done and they were clapping. But then in Toastmasters, everybody claps all the time.
Oh, they do. Yeah. They fall on your face and you clap. It's, you know, woohoo, this is great.
I felt that moment too. And I thought that's exactly what's going through your mind is like, OMG, I'm going to go overtime.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was a beautiful, really raw and heartfelt moment. I was having a love affair with the people in the audience and it was, I could feel it. It was beautiful. And I got a standing ovation. I don't know if anybody's ever gotten a standing ovation. I was shocked. God was shocked.
For me, I love the fact that it was just so real. Now, don't get me wrong. We have a lot of great presenters and they put a across very important. But I think one of the things to remember is the presentation is not necessarily or specifically for that audience that you're presenting to. Yeah. My understanding is that it's representative of the types of presentations that you give to your audiences.
Yep. And because of that, you know, it's a double-edged sword, because I can be authentic and entertaining and fun in 18 minutes, but you're also not going to get the full feeling of the depth of my knowledge about imposter syndrome, because the other 38 minutes that I have of the presentation goes into a much deeper dive. So a double-edged sword, because that was one of the evaluations I got from the judges is like, yeah, that's just it didn't go deep enough. And I was like, yeah, I know. I can't do that in 16 minutes.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, speaking of time, we're almost coming to a close here. And one of the things I always wanted to ask, and it's funny because quite often you hear people say, well, it's not rocket science, or you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure it out. Whenever I hear that now, I think of you. Just curious, what do you think when you hear people say those types of things?
Oh, I think set your standards higher. You know, that's the first thing I think. Because I worked alongside with a lot of rocket scientists and, you know, great people, but I don't want to diminish the work I did or the organization. Working for NASA was a tremendous joy and privilege. And, you know, we did some crazy, wild, fascinating things. But really, I mean, I worked side by side with these people. This was our job. This is what we were skilled at. This is what we were qualified for. Take them outside of the technical, the NASA arena. Yeah, we were sometimes fish out of water. There's no doubt about that. That's why I joke too. It's like when I tell people, oh, yeah, I'm a rocket scientist. Oh, you're a rocket scientist? I say, yeah, I know. That just means that when I do something stupid, and you say, what are you, a rocket scientist? I could say, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. Because we're capable of doing crazy, odd, bizarre things as well as anybody else.
Well, folks, if you think this is rocket science or not, I encourage you to take the opportunity to share this incredible episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to read Stephanie Darling's article, Newly Accredited Speakers Exemplify Resilience, The Two Accomplished Women Persevered Through Previous Doubts, in the January 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Maureen, before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you two things. And the first thing I'm going to ask you is, can you perhaps offer one piece of advice for someone who either wants to overcome imposter syndrome or perhaps move towards becoming an accredited speaker?
I think my first advice for imposter syndrome sufferers is to recognize you're not alone. A lot of people struggle with it, and there is a way through it. That's number one. For people that want to be accredited speaker, build the business first. Go to work, build the business first. Don't set accredited speaker as the goal if you don't have a business already. Do the business part first, and then look to see if accredited speaker is in the crosshairs, because it is a lot of work to build the business. And it doesn't make sense to me to build the business just to get accredited speaker, only to have the business just kind of be off by the wayside, like, oh, did that. To me, that's unproductive for you and your audiences.
That makes perfect sense. And finally, Maureen, what's the best way for people to connect with you?
Oh my gosh, I'm probably the easiest person in the world to locate, connect with, find. There's good and bad about that, but my website is probably the home base for everything you need from me. It's first name, last initial, MaureenZ.com. And there you'll see all of my programs, my demo video, links to YouTube, my blog, my other resources, including, well, I haven't put my most recent book up there yet, because I'm still waiting for the final approval. It's any day now, we're going to get the final approval to have it be released.
And that's Maureen Zed for those of us in Canada and perhaps in the UK.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, I have plenty of Canadian friends and I forget that.
That's not a problem. We'll certainly put a link to all the resources mentioned in the show notes and also a link to your presentation as well. Maureen Zappala, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Congratulations on your accredited speaker designation. And I guess the universe awaits you.
Oh, Greg, that's such a kind thing to say. It's always a joy to talk to you. You do such great work for TI, you know, the organization that I love. So thank you for inviting me to be a part of this today.
It was an honor.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Before we wrap up, a quick word from our sponsor, Year to Success. Are you ready to transform your life one day at a time? Year to Success offers a full year course combining education, inspiration, and action to help you achieve your personal goals. With daily lessons, inspiring success biographies, and actionable assignments, you'll redefine what success means to you. Visit yeartosuccess.com and start your journey to becoming the best you. That's yeartosuccess.com. Make this year your most successful yet.